What's the cost of this? That I'd be intrigued by that as well. Maybe I need
Well, once you get in your personal computer and you're not blocked from going to those websites, you can do a deep dive.
And how creepy would that be if my wife walks in and I'm looking up OnlyFans information? Hey, it's for work.
I'm doing research, Kathy.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Oh, I put a smile on her face. She is back.
You're back.
I'm back. I was here yesterday.
I know, but we're back together after seven shows apart.
Yeah, cue that Peaches and Herb. Just kidding. You don't know. Wow.
I got it ready.
Jazz had that ready to go. It's hard not to like that song.
The good thing is, I feel like this is the last, we'll be together for a while now.
Yeah,
I mean, both of us don't have any big trips planned.
I got my listener
later
trip to Hawaii, and then I got a few little ones between now and then.
We may have a day here, a day there where we're not together, but for the people who really love us together.
Which is a good group. I shared that email I got yesterday from a fan who loves the show. So,
who specifically loves Fridays. He's like, it's incredible the fact that you guys can get as heated as you do and then not walk away angry. That is true.
It all speaks to the uniqueness of what we try to do here on Point Taken. She's Chris and I'm Steve. It is Tuesday. We have this sort of informal tag that we put on this. It's Talking Tuesday.
Tuesday.
We have no guests.
When we have no guests and it's just 2 hours of you and I talking about different topics, getting input from the audience on different topics, and just letting it rip.
And we're trying to decide what to like start with. And we've crafted sort of an interesting first hour. It involves a little bit later on some recent polling about American pride in our country. We certainly had a big event on the president's birthday on Sunday night, live from the White House grounds.
Live from the UFC fight. 4,000 people were there.
Yeah, is that a good crowd?
I think so.
Well, he said. I don't know. 100,000 at some point.
I don't know what capacity would be on the White House lawn. I imagine 100,000 people is not. You would not be able to fit 100,000.
Now, have
there.
You ever watched a UFC fight in its entirety?
No.
Okay, so my good buddy Kenny Edwards, if you're out there, because he's a loyal listener and a lifelong friend, he always would get the fights. So I've watched a lot of UFC fights. It's not really my thing, but I mean, it's like Gladiator without the weapons, right? Two people at it.
I've seen clips for sure.
Yeah,
and it is. I've seen probably more boxing matches from start to finish. Yeah, because I don't think I've ever actually watched a UFC fight from start to finish. I'm not going to say, I understand that it takes a lot of skill.
Oh, yeah.
I understand that training. They are incredible athletes in some ways. But yeah, as far as the watching and betting on people beating the crap out of each other, and I think the type of person that it takes to be willing to do that as a living, probably there's some shared traits between those folks.
Yeah.
But I will say, you know, what's interesting about this as we talk about, like, for those who watch, I actually, first and foremost, because you did not talk about this yesterday at all.
No.
Okay. So if anyone watched it, I would love to hear your thoughts about it. So shoot us a text, 855-616-1620. I did not watch it, but a lot of people couldn't watch it because you only could watch it. But if you were subscribed to Paramount Plus, this was not a ABC, NBC, right. Like this was not on basic cable for everyone to enjoy.
Not in its entirety, but some of the networks like CNN would touch into it.
Yeah, but like as far as watching the full the full event, it was behind a paywall, right? It had sponsors like Bud Light sponsored the Octagon or whatever, and so it's funny because as we get into this conversation about. This was a celebration, partially for his birthday, but also because, you know, it was Flag Day, as we're gearing up for 250 celebration. And to me, there is a part of it that, like, do you watch this, and does it make you feel patriotic? Does this make you look and see your country and see what we are about and celebrate? And, like, for me, no. But as I was really thinking about this and thinking about, you know, the sponsorships, the fact that you had to pay to be able to actually watch it, all of the, you know, the fact that it was on Larry Ellison's Paramount Plus, the relationship between Dana White and the money that he got from this and all this stuff. And in so many ways, this is such a cynical view, but it is compared to maybe 50 years ago when we had the 200th anniversary. Is this not emblematic of what America has become. Spectacle, consumerism, capitalism.
Pay for play.
Pay for play.
Yeah.
It's and like
it's demonstrative of what the president stands
it
for.
It feels like it's missed so much of us are it's missing heart and soul and something like more grounded. But in reality, when we look at so much of the landscape of what America is in 2026, is this more of a mirror?
I think it's an accurate representation of what this president stands for. He likes to play in the world of the super wealthy and rich, right? He wants to be part of that team. That's why he's got the richest guys in the world all swirling around him, the Bezoses, the Musks, the Ellisons, all these people who want to be part of this administration, even though none of them were elected to be part of this administration. They all want to be players in our form of government. And it's an interesting time in our country because we are seeing the rise of the super rich. I did mention yesterday that we have our first trillionaire.
Oh, yeah.
Something I predicted years ago.
Did you get in on that? On the SpaceX IPO?
I didn't.
Okay.
I did. This interesting little side story about I was on a cruise ship, and as we were at Port Canaveral, that port, docked right next to us, both SpaceX barge and Blue Origin barge, right across the thing. So I'm looking at those two. That's again, emblematic of what this country's about. We have these huge, mega-rich dudes who are now actively involved in our government. I'll say this about the fights. The president is right that his base loves, this is meat and potatoes. They love the punching. They love the fisticuffs. They want to fight. It's in every damn commercial when you have a campaign that involves a Republican, especially a MAGA Republican. We're going to fight back. We're going to take this country back. We're going to celebrate America. And as we get to the NBC poll a little bit, that is clearly represented, that pride is represented by this kind of stuff on the Republican side of the aisle. They want this. They need this. And the president revels in it. He had Dana White, the CEO of the UFC org, sitting, I think, between him and Melania, or, you know, they were sitting together. And every celebrity that has ever been identified as a potential conservative was at this thing. Comedians. Nate Bargatze was there.
And he's getting a lot of flack on it.
Because he says he's not political, but he was there. A bunch of other comedians.
Well, there actually wasn't that many. Shane Gillis was there. Nate Bargatze was there. Luke Bryant. But there wasn't a ton. I would say what it looked like was a lot of CEOs.
Yeah.
But not as necessarily the same star power, but there was a handful.
It was a birthday celebration. But I think what we're going to learn about this president and America's 250, not the local stuff, that's going to be fine. I'm actually already working with some different cities about some of the things that they're talking about with their 250th, as far as interviews and stuff, away from the show. But this 250 is about the president. He's actually going to turn most of these events into campaign rallies. It's not going to be about the country. It's going to be about Donald Trump. And we'll talk in a little bit also about some of the, you know, the things that I've mentioned before, the grandiose displays that the president is fond of, gold in the White House, the arch that's going to be the biggest arch ever, right, that he apparently saw when he was in Europe, because they have a lot of arches there, and he wants to emulate here. His use of the Lincoln Memorial as the walkout for the UFC fighters on Sunday. That's an interesting use of a memorial to a president who I don't think he would endorse some of the things that this president talks about or at least pushes for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's, because we have a poll when we come back to you, I would love to hear from you. What does it mean to be patriotic and how patriotic are you feeling on the eve of our 250th anniversary as a country? 855-616-1620. He is Steve. I am Kristen. And this is Point Taken.
Little boss for you on a Tuesday here on Point Taken. Kristen and Steve, we're talking about the UFC event on Sunday night, celebrating the president's birthday. And really the kickoff to what is going to be an immense party in Washington, D.C. and in the entire country for our 250th. Somebody said we're Trump haters. I don't hate the president. I actually want the president to succeed, but I will call out the president when he does things I don't like. That's sort of what I'm paid to do.
Yeah.
I mean, so I could sugarcoat it, but if you want that, you can go find a different station in time where they just love everything the president does. Is that like reality? I don't think so. My quick take on that. You're not a fan of UFC. You didn't watch it.
I was also celebrating my birthday.
You were celebrating, which is going to be...
Technically, my birthday is on Thursday. My actual official birthday is on Thursday, but we spent the week celebrating, and I have a major shout-out for Camp Kettlewood in East Troy, but we'll get to that later.
So I guess for me, because we're going to kind of morph into a conversation about American Pride in a second, because I was watching NBC on Sunday morning, and they on Meet the Press, Kristen Welker launched a new, and Steve Kornacki launched this new poll about American Pride and pride in country. And I think for a lot of people, Republicans, MAGA Republicans, this is, again, I'll say it again, this is our meat and potatoes. They love this stuff. And I'm a huge flag waving guy. I have a flag up in my front yard right now off the house. I try to fly the flag as much as possible. I'm actually dismayed by the number of people who don't ever fly the flag. I don't know if that means anything. And I don't think that's a standard bearer that says you're a great American if you have the flag up all the time. I don't make that qualification. It does concern me that I think less and less people are proud of their country. I guess the question for me here is, does this make us proud of our country? I don't know, maybe for some people, you're celebrating what is a very popular sport. You're celebrating the incredible business success of an organization based on beating up on each other. Boxing before that, and you know, whatever, obviously go back 2,000 years to gladiators, always popular. People love to watch it. All levels of society.
I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but the guy who actually won the fight, and then when Joe Rogan handed the mic to him, you know, he yells into it.
He rips on the former first
Michelle
lady.
Michelle Obama is a man, am I right, America?
Apparently there was a camera on Trump, and he was like, He
didn't like it.
He was put off by that, which is the right response.
Which is definitely the right response.
So I mean,
better response would also be if he took to Truth Social, as he often does,
yeah,
and said, you know, that wasn't appropriate. And, you know, it was our first black first lady. But so it's things like that where it just feels like, I don't know. But it's like, I think it also turns like, what does make you feel patriotic?
When our government does things that I think most Americans supports across the aisle. Right. So one of the things that when we were reading some of the stories on all this stuff, at least I was, and you were doing it in your own way, we see, you know, a look back to like 1976. Now,
I was not born yet.
Yeah. But I was.
Do you remember it?
I was a high school graduate.
Yeah.
My tassels are red, white, and blue. I mean, that was 200. It was a big deal. So everyone loved America. That was a great story. And then we didn't.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not like 1975, 1976. Things were just like
easy breezy.
Right? Like these were also tumultuous times.
Right. High interest rates. We just had gotten out of the Vietnam War. Obviously, the whole Nixon thing, him resigning because of Watergate. So, and, you know, just civil unrest was still a story going back to 1968 and past that. So we sort of came together. We didn't see that return until 9/11. When again, everybody was on the same side. Politics didn't matter. And then slowly, slowly, slowly that eroded. We see the rise of populist leaders like Donald Trump in 2016 and still today, his second term. It is, for me, patriotism and pride is fleeting. It's not an everyday thing anymore. And that's the shift and the dynamic change. It's not an everyday thing. I would love us, and maybe this is naivete or just wishful thinking, to be a country we can all be proud of. But that requires policies that make sense for most, not all, you're never going to get everybody, but most Americans.
But I also think, like, it's like, is it, you said, so your first answer when I asked, what makes you feel patriotic? You said it was when your government does the right thing, does good things.
For most people.
I actually think it comes back to, like, sports. Because as we're in the World Cup right now, right? Yeah. And the Team USA played and won on Friday night. Or I think back to the Olympics. And I think it's actually less. I think the dissent and criticism is often around government. And I don't think that's unique to America, right? Like, there's plenty of countries, especially as we're seeing different celebrations. Like, it wasn't even an upset because it was tied for Spain yesterday. Cape Verde? Is anyone?
Yes.
Cape Verde. And they had, like, the goats and they were celebrating and stuff.
It's a big story.
And so, you know, you think about when you get to see the Olympics or the World Cup and different countries, including our own, you shed any criticism often you have for your government and you get overwhelmed in pride of your culture, of the people you are brethren with because of your shared citizenry. And I actually think patriotism comes a lot more from the relationships and culture to your neighbors, your friends, your family, than a reflection of the government, right? And I think you see that in sports. You see that in NASA going and Artemis, right? And so I could, and if we talk about dissent, it's usually against our government or like our capitalist system in the, I think, usually the pursuit of making the country better.
Absolutely. And I think you will see on full display, I know we're late for break, this celebration locally for 250 will be amazing. A lot of small towns across this country. Don't look to Washington, D.C. That's a carnival. And in many ways, the president's a carnival barker. Look to your local celebrations. That's where the rubber meets the road. Quick break. All right, we're gonna tee up the NBC poll on patriotism, pride in America after the news break. Great text from Mike in Fond du Lac.
So Mike from Fond du Lac. I watched the UFC event at the White House, so I immediately texted like, "How'd you get an invite?"
Yeah.
He goes on, "I am not MAGA. Trump is an entertainer, better at entertaining than a president, my opinion. Just looking at the event, it was a success. It is funny, just a while back, MAGA and the supporters were cheering Kid Rock shooting up Bud Light, protested the product. MAGA was drinking it like water during that event, being a huge sponsor. The support of this president is whatever way the wind blows that day. Patriotism doesn't really matter to many of them as long as Trump is their fearless leader."
Yeah, it's a worship of a politician. And I think that's an interesting development in our country's history. It's not unique. It happened other places and other times. But we'll tee up that important new poll after the break. Swinging on a Tuesday here on Point Take at Chris and Steve. Back together, reunited, as Peaches and Herb like to say. So I'm watching, as I often do, the Sunday morning shows. Back from vacation, trying to catch up. Because I literally paid no attention.
I know, good for you.
My daily...
That's how I'm feeling today. I got to catch up.
Yeah, my daily phone use was like 30 minutes.
Good for you.
Yeah, which is... Honestly, I did a little bit on this yesterday. We might do some later. There should be a serious movement to disconnect from phones. I'm talking about, I would even sponsor locally a put your phone down day where you don't even touch your phone. Leave it. Maybe if work related, fine. Put your phone down. Disconnect from that crap. I didn't miss it. But obviously the reality of doing a political talk show with you requires me to pay attention. So Sunday morning, I'm watching Meet the Press. Kristen Welker does a lovely job, talented journalist. But they had Steve Kornacki on, the pollster of pollsters, talking about an interesting poll that looking at pride in country, pride in America. And there's a lot here. I mean, the headline is somewhat telling. America 250 is riven with doubt and pessimism, but with glimmers of hope. I love the hopeful piece.
Mm-hmm.
But for the first time in history, the number of people who are not proud to be, that number has crept up. A record low number of Americans say they are now proud to be an American. And that is fundamentally disappointing to me. So I'm part of the disappointed group. I don't like that. I do believe, and you can jump in whatever you want to, I think this is a very unique country. I think it should be a melting pot. And I hope it continues to be that. Whatever this administration or future generations have to say about that reality, I think it needs to be, because my story is that. Your story, most of our stories are from people who are brave and courageous enough to come from another place. My case, my mom from the UK, my dad's family from Italy, Sicily, and make a life for themselves, had families, had jobs, but didn't just remain, in my case, British or Italian. They became Americans, and they encouraged their kids to work hard and to have their own families. And I have three brothers and a great set of parents who I'm thankful are still with us at 90 years old. And to share that story, that makes me proud to be American. And I would think that most of the world, up until very recently, thought that same thing about our country. That it was a place to aspire to go to college to. Because we know that so many students, I've spoken at colleges all across this country on gun violence and mass shootings. And I see the faces, and they're not all looking like me. That's a celebration of the diversity, the power of diversity, which, whatever you think about the current arguments, made us better. made us smarter, enriched our lives, because it offered in its own unique way a chance to understand viewpoints that weren't specific to this country. We learned about other people. We learned about how they celebrated things. We don't have to all be the same. That's boring as hell. Who wants that? But it's the excitement of that. And I worry that as we move forward, now 250 years later, that we lose that uniqueness. And I know there's all kinds of scholars that argue it's not a unique country, but I still feel that way.
Oh, I think, really?
Yeah. I mean, they like to, there are a group of people, and it's not just scholars, it's other people as well, who like to poke at the flaws, right? But nothing's perfect.
It was last month, May, end of May, when I went up to Cameron, Wisconsin. And the reason we went to Cameron on that day was the Pioneer Village Museum had gotten a grant from PBS for community conversations. And in those events, they're playing about 30 minutes snippets from Ken Burns' American Revolution documentary, which is what, 12 hours in total?
Yeah.
And I have started it. I have not finished it. And I remember writing down as we were sitting there and watching clips of it, of even from the very beginning of what the ideals were as they were drafting them, as our forefathers were drafting them. And even from the very beginning, the cognitive dissonance between what was being written down and what was reality, like the fight over who was actually considered, you know, did you have to own property? But it was definitely only white men.
Yeah.
Definitely wasn't women, despite Abigail Adams being like, hey, you want to include us? But, you know, it's like, we had slavery. Women didn't have any rights. What if you didn't have property, what rights did you have? But on paper, we had this very idealistic vision of what this country was going to be founded on, which had never been done before, right? And so I think it is, from the very beginning, the audacity of what this country was built on, and the 250 years since, is a constant pursuit of literally trying to create a more perfect union. Like, I feel like the story of this country is constantly chasing what we originally wanted it to be.
And you've talked a lot about this piece. There's a lot of different pieces. I'll share the link if we can share it on our newsletter on Sunday. I think you should read the long form version of the NBC poll just to get all the nuance of this thing. But here's the one. You've talked a lot about this. 78% of the 3,000, which is a large poll, because typically there are 800 to 1,000, said the American dream is further out of reach. You've spoken to this. It's unattainable. Average age of homeowners, home buyers, is like well into their like late 30s and 40s. People used to buy homes when they were 21. They got married, had kids. Maybe it wasn't.
People having less kids because everything's so much more expensive.
So that number is stunning to me, because if there is a uniqueness to this country, it is defined by that vision of what is referred to as the American dream.
Well, and I mean, and also the consider each generation doing better than their parents did. Which Gen Z as of right, millennials kind of, but I think certainly as of right now, Gen Z not projected to be doing financially better than what their parents were doing.
Yeah, and here's another number that stands out, the dazzling details, as Wex used to say. For the first time in the poll's history, because this is a recurring poll, a majority, 52%, said they have very little confidence or none at all in the federal government.
Do you have faith in the federal government?
I do.
Do you?
Yeah, I still do, yeah. But I worry. And that no confidence was in just 10 years. It went from 34% to 52%.
It's interesting. Have you been following this Hunter Biden? Let's take a break.
Yeah.
I want to talk about this Hunter Biden tweet because he hit the nail on the head. And that actually is what gives me more hope, which I know is maybe an ironic statement when we're talking about Hunter Biden. Stay with us. This is Point Taken. And I'm Kristen, he's Steve. We're spending this first hour back together after not being together for 7 shows, talking about patriotism and the declining number of Americans who feel patriotic. What makes you feel patriotic? And I had just asked Steve before if he still has faith in the federal government. Because what was the number? How many people don't have faith in the federal government?
It's significant. It's for the first time.
58 or something?
52% said they have very little confidence or none at all in the federal government.
I would say the current
majority.
My faith in the federal government at present is low. My faith that we are moving towards reform and that the appetite for reform is really, really strong, and that millennials and Gen Z, when they rise to power, will pursue that. My hope for that is high. And it's interesting because there really is, we talk about so much of what people agree on, right? As far as even those reforms, like a lot of people, most people don't think gerrymandering, we should figure out a way to ban gerrymandering. We should figure out a way to cut how much finance, like what financing goes into campaigns. We should figure out the stock trades. Like there are all these things that have almost a supermajority of popular support. And so Hunter Biden, you've not been following this because you're off Twitter now, right?
Yeah.
So you basically got off Twitter, Hunter Biden got on, and he's been taking X by storm as far as his jokes, his self-deprecation, how he's responding to people. Even his biggest critics are being like, do I like Hunter Biden now? Like, and so he...
Transformational.
This was in the beginning of the month. And it has 142,000 likes. And so all these people are like, is he running for something? So this is what he said. Things most Americans agree on. Groceries cost too much. Tariffs suck and make no sense. Congress and presidents shouldn't trade stocks. The debt is a mess. The border should be secure, but legal immigration is good. Endless wars are stupid, especially ones that nobody wants and have never been explained. Americans are exhausted. AI is my new best friend that also might be trying to take my job, my ability to think for myself, and my humanity in the process. Yo, I love you, but WTF, but I still love you. Diversity is actually awesome. The opposite is boring AF. Canadians are super effing cool. Mexicans are chill. Putin isn't a good guy looking out for America's best interest. Rocky IV and Miracle are great movies. good neighbors are a blessing. Freedom of religion and coexistence without having to blow each other up is probably a good idea. We all question, are we alone in the universe? We all F up along the way. Epstein didn't hang himself. The Trumps and Epstein were best friends for decades. It's like Bert telling us Ernie was just an acquaintance in the same social scene on Sesame Street back in the day. The Cowboys sucked. Go Birds. Things we are told to fight about. Me, laptop, vaccines, transgender in sports, pronouns. That's the joke.
That's pretty well done.
And I do believe that. And I think this is why I love this show. This is why I love having conversations with people in person. That, like, there still is a lot that we agree on.
Yes.
And some of that is reform to how our government is working. But we need to have the courage and elect the people who have the courage to go make and prioritize these popular reforms.
Ring the bell, because we can think this all we want. But until legislators... our elected leaders actually take action on them, which they rarely do anymore because they just want to fight and be on media. Nothing happens. There are some of these issues, like, for example, marijuana, overwhelmingly supported. I mean, in this state, recreational marijuana is somehow still a controversial topic. It's like, I'm not recreational, I'm medicinal. How is this even a reality in the world we live in today? Now, we're not immune from this poll either. Two-thirds of adults, 64%, they have little or no confidence in the national news media. That's telling. So what happens when you have no confidence in the traditional media? You go find news, and I'm air quoting news, in other places. And whether it's vetted, tested, sourced, highly debatable.
Yeah.
And I would say that having consumed much of this stuff for my 10 years in radio, it's all extremely biased in different ways, depending on what you're consuming. So as much as people like to beat up on traditional journalists, I still celebrate them, and I know you do too, working for the Journal Sentinel. There's good work being done, but to continually demean the folks who do it is not going to make it better. It's going to destroy whatever confidence is left, which is not much, a third of our country who still believes in journalism and media. The trends are bad. I am optimistic. Because I'm always sort of optimistic, even though people perceive me as a grouchy old man. That's a caricature, right?
Well, it's a caricature that you sometimes play into.
I do.
But I agree. I don't think that's who you are actually, but sometimes to play the character of ranting and raving.
Well, again, I'm not a journalist. Some of this is performance, as you would well know, being an entertainer yourself.
Exactly.
She's Kristen. I'm Steve's point taken.
Well, we don't have a lot of time left in this hour, but I will wrap up patriotism. So we were in East Troy this weekend for my birthday at Camp Kettlewood, And it was also, as you probably heard if you listen to WTMJ, the East Troy Lions Club Music Festival.
Yeah, big annual
music festival. And so, and then on Sunday, because it was Flag Day, they had a big parade. And it was funny because we looked and we're like, is anyone watching the parade? Because there's a lot of people in the parade. And it was so, it was like very Americana. It was very cute to see how many people were in it. And that to me is still like what I hope to see in the next, like you said, all the local events.
Yeah.
And East Troy, especially because East Troy is just so cute. And like it's downtown and it's such an old city, like old train city, that it did feel like that specifically with all the flags and stuff felt more organic and grounding than any of the UFC stuff to me.
When it's done right, it's as good as it gets. It's Americana, as you said. And here's my little suggestion to all the elected officials who want to jump into these parades. Just be quiet. Just don't make it about politics. Just celebrate the country. It's not about you, not about your race, not about your job. Just celebrate the country.
It's about kids getting candy.
Yeah.
And being excited to see cool tractors and that are in the parade.
Yeah. And you want to know how cheap most of these elected officials are? Most of the candy getting thrown out in this parade is not thrown out by elected officials. Local ones, sure. The big ones, the candy never comes into their hand. Cheapskates. But yet they want to be in every damn parade. That's my warning to all you elected officials. Just stay home for one.
Buy the big size candy bars.
Yeah, the Tootsie Rolls. Big fan of that. All right, quick break.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Welcome back. It feels like a Monday for me, but it's actually Tuesday at 11 o'clock. And so you talked about this a little bit yesterday.
I touched on it, yeah, because it was sort of breaking news.
And I guess I knew in the back of my mind that there was talks about this, but officially now, the UK has now become the second country after Australia to basically ban Facebook, Snapchat,
it begins next
YouTube,
year, but yes.
TikTok, most social media besides, I think, WhatsApp and what was the other one? Pinterest? And I think there's unknown of what's going to happen with Roblox
Signal.
Or whatever.
With WhatsApp and Signal are not included.
Okay. But they are banning it for people who are under 16. And Australia's already done this, and it doesn't go into effect until next year. But the way it was interesting, because you linked the actual press release from the government. And right. So it is written in a way that is why this is such a good thing.
The reason why I wanted to bring this back is I just touched on it yesterday, because the breaking news was the prime minister was talking about it in a very specific way and why he thought this was a next step they had to take, albeit it doesn't start till spring 2027. What I liked about it was it's a leader saying something, one that I agree with, but two that I think needs to be said. But I'm curious, as someone who lives in that world way more than I do, what you think this means, and could this gain traction here? Would we be willing to ban, essentially, under 16?
So this is what I think is interesting. As we've talked so much about social media and how late our lawmakers have been to the game to try to regulate it, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of damage that's already been done in many ways. I think we're also now on the precipice of a lot of damage being done with like AI and not getting ahead of that. So I'm also interested in the countries that are maybe a little bit more heavy-handed in their government's involvement, how much sooner they will move on regulating AI than the United States will. On its face, I think this is a good thing, right? Like, I think there's enough out there that while social media is a nice to have and there are some benefits to it, there is also a lot of harm that can come from it. I don't know how it's like, we don't know how it's going to work in practice, right? When you have VPNs, you have kids lying about their age, like how many loopholes will there be for kids to get around it? I don't know.
That's the how question.
That's a how question. But do I certainly like the way they're framing this is like giving kids their childhood back, which is also interesting because so they're banning YouTube, but they're not banning YouTube kids. And so it's like, what do we want childhood to actually look like? And I say this as just getting off of a weekend of watching like the 10 kids who were invited to my birthday weekend, most of whom were all of whom were under 10, more were toddlers, but watching them just all like run feral outside and like. That is, like, to me, what you think when you think childhood and just be able to run and play and be free. and compared to what we're doing, so much of what we say now is screens and tablets. And this is exactly with Toy Story 2 coming out this weekend of like, that is the, that's the antagonist in this new version of Toy Story is the tablet. So that's the other question is like, is it just social media that is taking kids' childhood away?
No, of course not. But it is an easy connection, or I should say diversion for young people. I'll give you a real life example. So I'm on this cruise ship. We're in the Caribbean. It's gorgeous. Pools, every activity for kids you could ever think of. Because there's a ship, the ship was half kids because it's summer vacation time. And we knew that because we had our four grandkids.
Well, yeah, you guys picked it specifically so it was kid friendly.
But I'm looking around, sitting at the pool, having a Miami Vice cocktail, which is half something and half something else. It's just sugar and booze, basically, which I enjoyed immensely. But I'm looking at in the sun on a beautiful day in the sailing the Caribbean, and people are like glued to their phones. I'm thinking, and what, like, how is this a productive use of your time or even something you should be doing? And, you know, now they make it easy. They give you Wi-Fi on the boat, so you're never going to be disconnected. And I saw parents arguing with their kids, and we every night, which is the coolest thing about the trip, for the first time in our lives, parents, Kathy and I, our two daughters, and their families all ate together at a big dining table every night. Amazing.
That's fun.
That's a once in a lifetime that everyone but the youngest, who's only 1.5, will remember because they're all old enough to remember that. But I see people in the dining room, four people, again, on their phones in a dining hall on a vacation. Why? And it drives me nuts. This isn't just a kid problem. One of the things I wanted to ask you about as well, this is backed by like 90% of the British population.
Or, oh, really?
Yeah, nine out of 10.
How many teenagers do they actually pull, though?
Probably not that many. I'm curious what you think the reaction here would it be that enthusiastic?
Well, the reason why I don't think it will work here is because there's so much of these companies lobbying against it, and they're allowed to lobby against it, right? Like, I think when we get back, like going back to the conversation we were having in hour one, as far as the political will of our current lawmakers, I don't, as it stands right now, I don't have a ton of faith in them as far as how slow they have been to move on this and how much money is spent on lobbying them from Meta, from TikTok, from
Google. So we're going to sacrifice a generation or more because of the power of a few men.
I think so. I mean, if I had to bet as far as how quickly will we actually move on regulation and like how quickly would the U.S. follow this example? I don't think in the U.S. they will ever ban social media for under 16. I think there is too much of a libertarian streak, too much of a government over streak, or at least that's how it would be sold, because of how much power and money these companies have to try to taint public sentiment. But I do know that there's a lot of we interviewed Kristen Bride from the I'm forgetting the documentary that we interviewed. It was at the Milwaukee Film Festival as far as the increasing movement of people trying to pressure lawmakers that there is a lot of people who support having more regulations on these companies because it's not even that they exist, right? It's that because of these different lawsuits that are happening, we know that they are actively and knowingly creating a product that is addictive to children. We know that they are actively not protecting kids from predators on these platforms, that they're not protecting them from, you know, content that feeds eating disorders and all of these different things, and that it is a product that is built to keep you addicted to it and make lots of money.
And as somebody who watches enough true crime stuff on Netflix and other platforms, many of those storylines start with a connection made on social media, often among very young children.
You know, it's like I saw someone write about this the other day as like a grown man. He goes, why am I getting suggested friends that are teenagers?
Yeah.
Like it's his kids' friends, right? But like in what world does it make sense that in that little bubble on Facebook of like people you may know that you, Facebook, are suggesting that I friend 16-year-old girls or 15-year-old girls, regardless of the fact that I do know them in real life? Like, don't do that.
It's creepy. What do you think? 855-616-1620. Would we support it as parents? Because I'm under no illusion that kids are listening to the show. That not many, probably, if any.
We have a couple, like, early 20s.
Okay, well, that's kids, I guess. For me, especially. but I'm curious if you think this would get the support it's getting in the UK. I've said for many years, and I'm linked to that country by it's my place of birth, you know, just outside London. I often think that culturally, they lead us. They do things before we do. In many ways, it shows up in their media. It shows up in their conversations. It shows up in the hot topics that we all talk about and rage about every day. And they seem to be ahead of the
curve. There's also less people.
There is less people. Thanks, Jazz. But I felt that for a long time. And if they're leading the way on this, will we follow along? And will there be public support? So my question for parents, would we see that support? And would you support this? A ban, essentially. On all these platforms we've been talking about, except for Signal and WhatsApp, to say, you know what? We're not going to make it easy. There's always going to be exceptions. That's the how question. It's hard to block it completely. But for most kids, they would not be able to access. And I think it would be a positive.
All right. Let's talk more about it.
Wondering out loud if parents would support the efforts of the Prime Minister and all the lawmakers in the UK who are saying, basically, we're taking taking a bold and significant step towards creating a safer, healthier life online for our children and future generations. It's a bold, big statement. I don't get the sense, and maybe you disagree, that most people my age or younger, adults, think this is as big a problem as maybe I think it is. Its impact on...
I think it is.
You think so?
I think it's been fascinating as I'm trying to collect. So we've moved into the portion of the documentary where we've done the 80-some interviews or whatever, or 80 different people, I think 50-plus interviews because some of them were grouped together. But in the amount of young people I've spoken to that range from high schoolers in Northwest Wisconsin to, you know, sophomores or juniors at UW, Milwaukee, you know, and all over the place. And granted, there's a lot of places we couldn't go to. But one of the things that I found fascinating was the fact that when you talk to kids about polarization, they all know, at least almost every interview we did, they all know that social media is part of the problem, right? They're still on it. They all, you know, when they talk, we ask often, like, when did you get your first phone or when did you first get on social media? And for most of them, somewhere between 10 and 14. And the self-awareness of knowing that they are getting fed things that they don't actually follow, that they know that there is an echo chamber that happens, they know that polarization feels worse online than it does in their real life, and they're still there. And so it was interesting because then I would ask, I was like, do you feel like your other friends have this same self-awareness about social media? And often they said no, but I don't know if that's true because of how unanimous it felt in talking to so many different types of kids, young people, that recognize the downfalls of social media. Like there was no one who was just like staunchly defending that social media only has positives. And that's coming from young people. So I feel like it's the same thing as almost all of us as adults know. We're kind of addicted to it. It's really entertaining. It's a way to check your brain out. That's for me for sure, right? You're like, I just don't feel like doing anything. So I'm just sitting here scrolling and the dopamine is hitting my brain. I don't think it's any different than what I can tell from young people and how they also understand and engage with social media. Now, their willingness to step away from it is probably similar to like my willingness to step away from it. Like, I don't know. It feels something for me right now.
As somebody who stepped away from at least Twitter and for the most part, Facebook, it's liberating. My friend is a psychiatrist, deals with children. So he sent me his questions he asked.
Okay.
Sleep hygiene. You eat good. You make good food choices.
This is what he asked his clients.
Yes. Regular exercise and then screen time. And he estimates that 80% of the kids, they're honest about it and they say too much screen time. He asked the parents of those kids about it and they say they've given up on setting limits. They've given up. So we have this problem. The kids understand it, as you just said.
They understand it.
And yet we're just throwing our hands up. That's the thing that bothers me about a lot of it's like not to make this big leap, but like gun violence. We just throw up our hands. First Amendment or Second Amendment, can't do anything. It's the world we live in, blah, blah, blah. Nothing happens. Well, here we know what the problem is. There's too much screen time. It's not just kids, it's adults too. And here's a quick take on how whenever you challenge someone on their screen time, they get defensive.
Well, but it's not only that, it's also how everything, including someone texted in earlier today as a reminder that how many things now have to be done by using your phone, right? So it's like my dad's diabetic. And now all of his numbers and stuff is through an app on his phone. And so there's more and more stickiness that is happening with, like, survival being having to have to happen on here, because the assumption is, well, everyone has a phone, so put the health monitor thing on that. And so it becomes even harder to step away from it when we are making people feel like they have to use this to do anything.
I totally acknowledge that. I check my bank app constantly because I'm always worried about fraud and all that stuff. But here's the thing. When I did, I don't know if I was with you or when you were off, but I did a screen time.
No, I remember. You've been talking about this. Yeah. You're very proud of it.
Yes, because for the last 2 weeks, it's like an hour and a half.
It's great.
But again, people get very defensive about this. If you have that, because you can turn it off on your phone. You don't have to. The phone doesn't have to tell you. Turn it back on and look at it every week. You will be amazed how much time you're spending. And you can even break it down by where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's all social media, what the hell are you doing with your life? As I say, and I'm not trying to be insulting, read a damn book. Seriously. Learn something different than what you're getting told on these platforms.
Should we do that for our survey for the extra points this week?
Screen time?
Ask people for their screen time.
Absolutely.
All right. That's a good one. I'm going to write that down before I forget it.
That's your homework. Pay attention. If you got it turned off on your smartphone, turn it the hell back on now. That's my ask. And I'm being very demonstrative about it because it bothers the hell out of me that we know there's a problem. And like so many things in this country, we don't do real things to address the problem. UK is doing something about it. What are we going to do if we're the best and the brightest, supposedly? What are we doing? And parents, stop giving up. Do something about it. Break.
From the 847, I'm streaming your show while taking a walk in South Carolina. Would you consider that a useful screen time?
Yes, enthusiastically yes, because you're listening to a program that tries to embrace these issues that are screwing us up. We have to start thinking about this stuff. Social media is a curse for many people. We have to fix these issues.
I totally agree. I mean, it is interesting to me because it said, so from the 262, I agree with you on what you're saying about phones, but do you think government can fix the problem?
It's not perfect.
And
I don't,
so many of the things in our society, whether it's food, I think social media, those are the two that I think of first and foremost, of things that we frame as moral failings or a lack of discipline. So like we think about obesity and stuff like that, and we think that's a personal problem versus the systems and regulations that we've set up as a society. And I think it's similar with social media and our phone addiction of like, is this because we individually are not disciplined enough to make the changes? Or is it like, this is how we've set it up and we allow companies to advertise to us? Like these are all billion-dollar industries that need us. And if we don't regulate them, what stops them from continuing to exploit us as the consumer or as the product?
Yeah, exactly. They have a responsibility here. All right. This is the topic I've never been on the site. I know about it because we've talked about it before. OnlyFans.
There's a shirt that I see that pop up every once in a while, and it's like kind of like a vintagey looking shirt, and it's a bunch of different images of fans, like actual fans, and it says OnlyFans. Hmm. I think it's a funny, punny shirt.
So I saw the headline.
I've never been on it either.
Okay. Well.
So we're kind of the blind leading the blind of like how it works. What I understand of how it works is, you as a creator have a profile and you put content on that profile that is paywalled for subscribers only, right? So you are getting people to pay you directly to access the content you were putting on your profile. And a lot of the people who are making a lot of money off of this, it is sexual in nature. Now that can be the spectrum, right? That it's not necessarily having sex. It's not necessarily even all nude photos. Like, people do feet stuff. Like there's all.
Is it one on one or is it like to a mass audience?
I think it's still to a mass audience. Like I don't know how much of it is like one on one conversations or how much it's like I have posted this stuff and you can only see it if you are a subscriber to my page.
Okay, I'm maybe naive on this question as well, but what, like all this stuff's available for free on the internet. Like there's explicit videos. It's all there.
I think people get attached to creators that they like.
So it's an individual.
I think it's something about that, the relationship to that person. I think. Someone anonymously could maybe tell us otherwise if
yeah.
they are.
Yeah, because it is anonymous. The reason this came up is I saw a headline in Milwaukee Journal. So it's going to be my Wisconsin story recommendation on a newsletter this week because I'm intrigued by it. Wisconsinites spent $45 million on OnlyFans in 2025 last year. And there's also a breakdown on cities that spent the most in Wisconsin.
I wonder where that ranks as far as vices. Like,
I see.
Right? As far as like,
I don't know.
Money spent on Wisconsinites, money spent on alcohol, cigarettes, THC, CBD products, or, you know, Delta 8 products. What else would we put in there? Is like the different buckets of money spent.
Golf.
Sure. And where that ranks compared to other things.
What I was intrigued by is because I thought, okay, so Milwaukee would have to be the biggest consumer. No. Green Bay.
Hmm.
Top 50 nationally.
So top 50. Where does it fall in top 50?
It's 47. So
okay.
It's, just made
right.
It's not 10, but it's not a big city. It's like there's 100,000 people living there.
It's the fifth biggest city?
Yeah.
It goes Milwaukee, Madison, Kenosha, Racine, or maybe vice versa, yeah. And then Green Bay. Yeah.
So even though it's not a huge city.
Actually, is it third? Someone's going to correct us.
Yeah. They're spending a lot of money in Green Bay on OnlyFans, so I need some Green Bay help on the text line. What's going on up there?
But you also said at the break that doesn't surprise you. Why does it not surprise you?
It's sort of I'm going to make a leap. This is all anecdotal. It's sort of the blue collar. I mean, nose to the grindstone. I mean, folks that, you know, they want to relax. At the end, they want to drink their beer. They want to go on OnlyFans. They want to pretend this woman is her girlfriend or whatever. That's my.
What is it? What?
I just think that's what it is.
Why? Do you think Green Bay is any more blue collar than Milwaukee?
I don't know.
That is such a random explanation.
Yeah,
for
I said it was random.
So what I think.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking for
so when you said
help.
That to me, because what I went back to, I had a clip. Or like a memory of getting to interview, is it Chris Crystal, who's the Packer historian?
Yeah.
I think is that how you pronounce it?
Cliff Crystal.
Cliff Crystal, thank you. So back in, I want to say like 2022, I had a chance to interview him. And in that interview, because that was when like his most recent book had come out at the time. And I didn't realize that I think now is like most Packer fans do know this, but the reason why Green Bay survived as one of the early teams during Prohibition is because Green Bay was like, yeah, we're not going to follow those rules. Like, and so all of these teams that, like, obviously there was only, whatever, 13 or 14 teams at the time, and it wasn't organized, so they're scheduling their own games. And these teams always prioritize going to Green Bay, because between the lack of prohibition there, and I think also the brothels that were
the ancient version of OnlyFans.
To some of these soda fountains. And so it's like, to me, my explanation for... It's like there's more of a history there. There's more of a history of lax rules when it comes to sex and alcohol. And so that, to me, is more of a historical tie to maybe that why that's the leading city for OnlyFans in Wisconsin.
I said at the beginning, I have no idea. That was just my theory. I want to hear from texters of why Green Bay seems to be leading the way. And if they even broke it down by county. And Milwaukee County is by far the largest. They're not even first. Sauk County.
Really?
Yeah. Like, what's going on in Sauk County? I want to know. Tell me on the text line, 855-616-1620. I wouldn't spend a dime for this content, but I know people do. Obviously, what was the actual national total? $2.6 billion. That's not insignificant. That's a lot of money for content. Again, it seems to be available everywhere. Any platform has it now. No one regulates anything. So why the hell, other than this fondness you have for some person that you don't really ever going
to
know.
Yeah, I think I would imagine it comes back to like a parasocial relationship with specific people.
Yeah. Would you ever sell content on OnlyFans? I'm not saying.
You know how Steve Wexler used to talk about like getting the water right up to the edge of the line?
That's the edge of the line?
There's an ongoing joke. I'm going to say this as PC as I can for radio. There was an ongoing joke with my friends and I. We would never, no. So the first answer, no, I would not do it. Okay. But in a attempt to like, if I ever needed some side money, because I have, I wear size 11 in shoes.
Big feet.
I have very big feet. I'm also very tall, so it's proportional. But I also have incredibly long toes.
Is that a big thing?
I think so. My dad has long toes. It's genetic. And so there was an ongoing joke with one of my girlfriends who is very well endowed in the chest area that we would have a channel that was tits and toes and that we would never have to show our face.
That's one of Carlin's seven words that you just uttered there, by the way.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, dump it. Press the dump button.
Yeah, too late now. What do you think? What's going on in Green Bay and Sauk County? I must know. I've got to know before we get out of here. 855-616-1620. Apparently people spending money on that stuff. Not me. They are. Quick break. Let the record show, Kristen got dumped. Used one of the seven words.
I didn't know that was one of the seven words.
Oh, yes.
Bad broadcasting.
You could have said boobs.
But then you don't have the alliteration.
True.
That's part of the funny part of the name.
TNT, yeah.
Yeah, TNT.
Well, people can now figure it out. So if you heard a little audio gap, that was because we
sorry
beeped
about
her
that.
Out.
Please don't fire me.
No, and I didn't get a big response from the people in Green Bay or Sauk County. I don't know. I'm just curious what's going on. Like, why? What's the need?
What is the number one city?
That's a good question. Talking while I'm looking.
Okay.
I'm looking it up.
It would be interesting to dive deeper into the shared traits of different cities and if there's anything that, like, patterns or rhyme or reason of why certain cities rank higher as far as money spent. It'd also be interesting, like, how much, because, you know, the median versus averages. And if you take out the extremes, like, is there just like, if you're doing average, is there just like a couple people in any of these cities that have a lot of money and are spending a lot singularly so that is bringing up the average? Or is it, you know, like where's the highest average versus the most amount of money? Like I want a data scientist. Someone come in and break this down for me.
Yeah, here's the problem. When I go to the original source report, it's blocked on this.
What is it supposed to? What website is it supposed to take you to?
It's a U.S. only fans spending by states. It's a report, but it's blocked. This site cannot be reached. Now it alludes to Mississippi being the
number, highest state.
Yeah, so take that for what it's worth.
Which is interesting because now they have such high literacy rates.
Yeah, is there a connection? So just going back to what you said about TNT, that's like a side hustle that if you needed to, you could go to. That you're saying?
Say it again.
Your side hustle you were proposing.
Oh, I'm not. Actually, this was a joke. This has always been a joke.
I'm just providing our audience with the information they need.
But it is funny, I think. But no, I am not going to be doing that.
I'm always amazed by what people will pay for. It's like, why?
What's the craziest thing you pay for?
I don't know. One of our producers are looking at me like, be careful. Tread lightly where you go.
So, like, what other things do you guys outsource for, like, stuff around the house? Cleaning lady?
Yeah.
Stuff like that?
Yeah. The craziest thing, we don't, vacations, we probably overspend. Yeah. But not like vices, because my wife doesn't drink and I'm not an everyday drinker.
Spend a fair amount of money on plants? No, because you grow a lot of your own plants.
I grow a lot of my own stuff, yeah. Which is the secret to, you know.
What's your biggest vice then? What's a stupid thing you spend your money on?
Cigars.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, I smoke a couple a week. So, I mean, it's not incredible. Although, the great thing about
gambling?
That's probably the biggest one. I just thought about the Las Vegas. Yeah, because that's the big one. No.
But you're not like a DraftKings. You're not doing sports gambling, like just on your phone, easy access.
It's too addictive. I don't want to, because once you start going down that road, it's hard to pull back. I'm a controlled gambler. I gamble in sessions. I don't gamble all day or all night. I know what my limits are, high and low. I get out at a certain number. I get in when I want to get back in. So, I mean, I'm balanced that way, nuanced. But I don't pretend to understand what's driving this, but I do know this, I read a lot in my life that men are very consumed with this reality, the world, whether it's prostitutes in the old days or VHS cassettes they used to jam into their VCRs when their wives weren't home or whatever.
Stacks of penthouses.
Stacks of magazines, Penthouse and Playboy. And now it's OnlyFans, which gives them really unlimited access at a cost. And I'd love to see that financial breakdown. Like, if you have a budget, and I don't know if these are primarily married men or not married men or partnered men, whatever. Like, what percentage of your budget goes to this stuff? And, like, what's the cost of this? That I'd be intrigued by that as well. Maybe I need
Once you get in your personal computer, yeah, you're not blocked from going to those websites, you can do a deep dive.
And how creepy would that be if my wife walks in and I'm looking up OnlyFans information? Hey, it's for work. It's for work.
I'm doing research, Kathy.
It's my homework. All right. Final break of the Point Taken Extraordinary Tuesday edition after this. I believe it's time for me to fly. Oh, that reminds me of my old show. I used to play that on our way out on occasion. So, a couple things. Let the record show two Steve Wexler mentions on the program today. So, our old boss and all-around nice guy. Doing a lot of golfing in his retirement. I see his pictures.
Do you?
Yeah, on Facebook. So he's having a good life. So, hey, shout out to Steve Wexler, a fantastic, fantastic human being, as well as a former great boss. On the OnlyFans thing, people are having fun with it. People are, in Green Bay, are very sexually liberated. I don't know if that's it, true or not. Packers and porn. I'm sure the Packers are happy to be linked.
More alliteration.
Yeah, like TNT. And let the record show, for the record of today's program, you were beeped. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
is that the first time for you?
Yeah, I think so.
No kidding. Yeah. It took OnlyFans to make that happen. You dropped the George Carlin, one of the
and
seven.
And really one of the least offensive words of the
seven. It should not even be a word that's not allowed. But thanks, producer Jazz, for getting that out. Now, will that be available on the YouTube stream?
Yes. Oh, so if it's only on the airwaves. So probably on the podcast. And
it'll be on the podcast.
It'll be on the podcast. It'll be on the YouTube stream. And I think if you're streaming it on like Alexa, I think it's only if you're listening on like an actual radio.
So opportunity to me to tie in our YouTube channel. So if you subscribe to Point Taken and 620 WTMJ, you can actually see and hear that actual conversation unedited. That's a good hook.
That's a good hook. We should also, if you have not subscribed to the newsletter yet.
Yeah, do it. Extra, EXTRA.
What did I put in last week?
You had some good stuff. You had the highlights of your big event.
Oh, yeah, I put in a picture from the event.
Mm-hmm. I was very dressed up. I love the one you did about your gardening updates.
The before and after pictures of
transformational.
I
said it before.
We had information on there for the high-speed rail. Oh, you should come to that. June 25th, the high-speed rail thinking big conversation about what it would take to get high-speed rail in Wisconsin.
Do I get to drive the train?
There will not be a train. There will be a panel.
Who's on the panel?
I know Mayor Johnson's going to be there. Lafayette Crump's going to be there. I'm forgetting this social media influencer refers to himself as the transit guy, as the keynote speaker.
Oh, I'm intrigued by that. Who's that person?
I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
I put all of the information in the newsletter.
I also know the other two gentlemen very well. So
yeah. So it'll be. I think it'll be a good conversation. That was one of the interviews we did last week.
During the day?
It is during the day after our show at the Oriental Theater.
I might show up for that.
I think you should come. I'm moderating, so that's another reason you should come.
Or not. All right, we'll do it all again tomorrow.
It's more talking. We have no more guests tomorrow either.
Yeah,
it's just
Wednesday.
More you and I chatting.
Is that
this is a good show.
No one wants to come on, or we just love to talk?
Well, I think it was you were gone. I had a busy weekend.
So much to catch up
on. Going ahead and booking a ton of guests. We have a lot to catch up on. You're
and
right.
We are 2 days away from the biggest birthday in your life, other than your first one. Kristen Bry's 40th. News is next.
You take pride in your Milwaukee area home. So why let it disappear when the sun goes down? At Blingle Premier Lighting, they create breathtaking landscape lighting that transforms your home into the showpiece of the neighborhood. Elegant uplighting, softly illuminated walkways, architectural lighting that highlights the beauty you've already invested in. Landscape lighting doesn't just make your home look incredible. It adds curb appeal, increases perceived value, improves safety, and creates an experience you enjoy every single night. In fact, it's the one thing homeowners never realize they want until they have it. And once they do, they can't imagine living without it. From luxury landscape lighting to permanent holiday lighting and patio lighting, Blingle designs custom systems built specifically for your home. No hassle, no stress, just a home that looks absolutely stunning after dark. See us at blingle.com/MKE. Blingle Premier Lighting. Your home will never look this beautiful. That's blingle.com/MKE.
Here's to sweet summer days together with friends and family in Wisconsin. To discovering magic in every moment.
Come on, over here.
And to reconnecting through a world filled with wonder.
Wow.
Here's to supper club celebrations. And dancing until the sun goes down. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your summer getaway at TravelWisconsin.com.
Hi, this is Julie Coombs
and Cindy Storm Fisher with Storm Fisher Investment Group.
Are you a retiring professional worried about the direction of our economy, about making your money last?
Come see what we can do for you. Let us show you how we take care of you to help you have a great retirement.
We are at 262-796-8400 or stormfisher.com. See you soon.
Securities offered through Osaic Wealth Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Osaic Advisory Services, LLC, Osaic Advisory. Osaic Wealth and Osaic Advisory are separately owned, and other entities and or marketing names, products, and services referenced here are independent of Osaic Wealth and Osaic Advisory.
Hey, Father's Day is Sunday. Don't forget your father. WTMJ's John Merck here. I highly recommend taking your dad, maybe your grandfather, to the historic Fox and Hound Supper Club for the all-you-care-to-eat Father's Day brunch. It is magnificent. Every dish dad loves, including desserts, which I know I love. Kids and grandkids under three eat for free. All